Hello and welcome back to Relatively Football, a women's football podcast hosted by siblings Theo and Flo Lloyd Hughes. My name is Theo, calling in from New Orleans, and I'm here with my sister Flo. How you doing, Flo?
Hello. Yeah, I'm all right. I've got Wi-Fi back. We're back in business.
Huge. Maybe. Yeah. Good morning to you, or good afternoon, even, and good morning to Alex Ibasita. Alex Ibasita.
I still think you got it wrong, you know.
Really?
I thought it was Ibasita.
Oh, bloody hell. You might be right on that one. well, Alex, you're still my favourite European football reporter. So thank you for doing you. And we'll start in Europe with a brilliant midweek Champions League extravaganza. No big surprises, Flo, as you were alluding to last week. We're not quite at parity in women's Champions League football. It stood out to me that the wonderful Tbilisian side you were rooting for ended up losing to Rosengard 17-0 on aggregate over two legs. It's tough at the top. But there were still some good games in there.
Yeah, I do still believe that the gap is closing, but unfortunately we were still blessed with one of those big aggregate score lines, because I think that's the real test, is looking at those gaps closing. But it was great to see. I think this is the first time they've ever qualified for the Champions League, so that's exciting in itself, and shows growth in areas where, you know, women's football probably isn't really considered as kind of a hotspot for women's sport there. But I think that's great in itself that they even qualified. I was having a look back at the round of 32 last year compared to this year, and we do have fewer aggregate scores in their teens.
Yes.
So yes, that's what we wanted. The data's there. The data doesn't lie. Last year in the round of 32, we had Wolfsburg winning 15-0 on aggregate over Mitrovica, who are based in Kosovo. Then we had Lyon winning 16-0 on aggregate over Ryazan VDV, who are team based in Russia. And then we had Man City winning 11-1. I know it's not teens, but double figures, 11-1 over Lugano from Switzerland. So there's some progress. The gap is closing, I think. And I would say we had a few shocks and surprises as well along the way.
Great response from Lyon. Beautiful goals. We were talking about it privately on the text this week. It maybe felt like after we'd seen a bit of a crack in the armour in the first leg, this was a response that was really, really needed. And quite emotional scenes after the first goal from Marijan, possibly related to the death of Gerard Houllier during the week.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was. I didn't know, but I wasn't sure if there was maybe a separate thing. Not saying that I'm sure she was a big fan of Gerard Houllier's work and obviously the role that he's had at Lyon. But I was just surprised that she'd been that affected by it. But it's amazing if it was. I wasn't sure if there's something else going on. But yeah, a very professional performance from them. I found it interesting that the goals were scored so late, given, I guess, the opportunities that they had. And I don't necessarily think the scoreline reflects Juve's performance across the two legs. Unfortunately, on that scoreline on aggregate, Juve don't really have much to show for the effort they put in and what they brought to those two games. So I guess that's disappointing for them, because the second leg especially just looks so one-sided. When I don't think it was. I think Juve still had a few good chances that they could have made the most of. Terrible conditions. You could hear the rain splashing throughout the whole of the match. It was just so, like, didn't stop raining once. Everyone was soaked. And a bit scrappy at times, but that quality shone through in the end. And, you know, Lyon weren't too bothered.
I really liked Juve's orange camo kit. You can thank them for bringing that to the Champions League party, albeit they're now out. Yeah, they lost 3-0 in Lyon. And a big shout-out for me goes to Melvin Mallard for her superb third goal, that combo with Marijan. I feel like Marijan, maybe because she didn't have the best 2019 World Cup, has been slightly forgotten. Obviously, you know, she's in the top 100. She's incredibly well thought of. The Twitter heads are all about her. But I thought it was good to see her have a game where she really stood out, and her touch and her timing, her vision was fantastic. And Melvin Mallard's really becoming a player to watch. Two incredible performances in this Champions League, both off the bench, turning the game on its head. So I'm really excited to see more of a player who was, you know, unknown to me before this tie. Moving on to some of the English teams, as expected, Man City and Chelsea breezed through with their home ties, both recording 3-0 victories in Manchester and South London. Chelsea with an experimental 11, giving time to Jess Carter, Neve Charles, won 3-0 against Benfica, Sam Kerr getting her first Champions League goal. And the highlight of the City game for me was seeing Lauren Hemp score that spectacular goal, cutting in from the left-hand side and swooping it over the goalkeeper, Jennifer Folk.
Yeah, absolute worldie from Lauren Hemp that's been doing the rounds on Twitter, getting a lot of love, a lot of reaction, and just shows why she was PFA Young Player of the Year last season, had such a good season last year, unfortunately cut short by injury, but hopefully this is, you know, she's getting there and she's going to be back to her best really soon, because you want to see her starting games. I mean, it's interesting because City have coped fairly well, I guess you'd say, without her. They've still got a lot of attacking out there.
Yeah, I mean, especially after signing Chloe Kelly.
Yeah.
It feels like they had a replacement ready to go.
Yeah, and she just brings an edge to her that maybe they've been lacking. But yeah, great to see her back, and hopefully she's over the worst of that really long injury.
Yeah, and you saw a bit of Ellen White and Georgia Stanway playing together in this game. Watching it, I thought that was interesting to see. We haven't seen that too much this year. They've been more like replacements for one another. And obviously they linked up for the goals. I thought Folk in goal for Göteborg played really well. And I thought the score, you talk about, you know, these bigger teams versus little teams in the Champions League. I felt like they were a little unlucky to get so heavily beaten by Man City. But you really feel like Man City are finding their rhythm, and in this competition are definitely making it look very easy in these early rounds. The game flow, which I don't know if you caught up on Twitter or the highlights, I didn't watch it live. That's sort of the final game I really want to shine a little spotlight on, is Fiorentina beating Slavia Prague. Did you follow this one at all?
I didn't watch it live, but I saw Alex's tweet, and that made me want to go watch the highlights, and that was pretty amazing. Do you want to take it away and explain the chaos?
Yeah, so it was 2-2 in the first leg in Florence, your namesake, and so the pressure was on for the Italians to try and get something in Prague. It was 0-0 going into the 90th minute, still 0-0 in the 94th minute, 94 minutes, 43 seconds. They're awarded a free kick about 35 yards out from goal, and the ball gets whipped in by Tatiana Bonetti. It's a decent ball in. It's got good zip, but there's still a lot of work to do because it's not really one of those ones where you can just get a touch on it and it'll go in. Diana Sabatino rises the highest, and she does some great heading technique, which you see Sam Mewis do a lot, where she heads it into the ground. And I think that's a really good way of maximizing, you know, the chance of the ball going in, because you're not just asking the header to get on target. You know, it can go into the ground and in any way it will find the net. And anyway, she gets her head on it, goes into the ground, keeper can't get there, goes in, they're through to the last 16, and the scenes on the sidelines were just marvelous. And we live in a tough world, Flo. It's been a tough year, but I think this Fiorentina last-minute win put a real smile on my face and gave me a lot of hope that there's still good in the world. And I needed that goal.
I think the celebration was the best bit of the whole thing, just the way they came together in that crazy way on the sidelines to celebrate that winner. And everyone knows what it's like to watch your team score one of those goals, but to be in that moment and score is so special. And this is the first time they've qualified since 2017-18, I think. Sorry, 2018-19. And I believe they haven't gone further than the last 16. So they're not a team that has a huge history in this tournament. Their opponents have always done fairly well, normally progressing beyond the last 32. So yeah, a big win for them, and to do it in such dramatic style was great.
And obviously, being in the Champions League, they did finish second in Serie A last season, but they have had a really tough start to the season. 16 points behind top of the table Juve after finishing just 9 points behind them at the end of last year. So you can see Fiorentina maybe dropping off in the league, especially with AC Milan investing more in their women's team. So you maybe feel like this is a big deal for a club that, like you said, don't get too many bites at the apple in regards to the Women's Champions League. Glasgow City were another casualty of the round of 32. It was sad to see them go out.
Yeah, it's a weird one because Glasgow did really well, got to the bubble tournament, got to the quarterfinals last year and ended up getting beaten, drew a really tough game against Wolfsburg. But it's been a tough year for them. The Scottish League, the run that they've been on, winning so many titles in a row, that gap is closing and things are not as easy as they once were for Glasgow. They lost on the weekend to Rangers 5-0. A bit like you were saying about AC Milan, Rangers and Celtic have really pushed on with their women's team and have put a lot of money into them and are trying to close that gap on Glasgow, who I think have won 14 titles. You know, don't get me wrong, they didn't have an easy draw because Slavia Prague have progressed before into the kind of latter stages, last eight of the competition. So they would have liked an easier draw, but given how well they did last year, it is disappointing. And I was watching a post-match interview from the game last night in which one of their players was talking about some spitting that the Slavia players had spat on them. So it was obviously a pretty intense...
We don't approve on Relatively Football.
No, we don't. An intense game, and one that didn't sound like a great experience. They said they complained to the ref about it, but nothing seemed to be done about it. I don't know if there'll be retrospective action from UEFA, but such a tough way to go out with that and then just playing really poorly. They just didn't really create any chances. So, yeah, it's a bit tough for them at the moment. They've lost a couple of key players to injury and, it's a difficult one.
Your cheeky Dutch sides, PSV and Ajax, were removed at the hands of Barcelona and Bayern Munich respectively. Not massive thrashings like you were saying, maybe small increases of a closer tournament, but another impressive showing from Barcelona. And Flo, did you see Barcelona keeper Catalina Juch, some of her technique from the match?
I didn't. I don't know what you're referring to. I have watched the highlights of that, but...
There was a video during the rounds, listener. I really recommend you go and find the Barcelona keeper just absolutely rinsing the PSV forwards who are trying to press and close her down. Incredible close control from this goalkeeper. As the PSV player kind of gets close to them, she just jukes and jinks the ball out the way. Really cool to see, even right at the back, the Barcelona kind of skill, technique and close control is in good hands. Anything else from the Champions League, Flo, or are you ready to move on back to English shores?
I think it's back to shores.
Back to the shores. Let's take it back. I suppose maybe not quite English shores, but sort of transatlantic shores. The Athletic unveiled their highlights of 2020 this week, Flo. Sporting highlights, that is. Any issues with that?
Yeah, issues, because there's...
It seems to be a very
one-sided timeline of what happened in the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think this obviously isn't irregular. There's blatant sexism in all aspects of media, culture, history, sport, whatever you want to call it. I think for a group like The Athletic, who have gone on record for trying to change the game, and to give them credit, have done a lot of really progressive actions in trying to be more positive, more inclusive, more financially stable, better coverage, etc. You know, people like Meg Linehan have been incredible, and, you know, Meg Linehan's been one of the biggest critics of this piece. So even to see big outlets like this straight up ignoring women's sport in every asset, every kind of aspect, every corner, it's just really disappointing. And it's just another fun day on Twitter to see everyone, you know, getting the daggers out.
Yeah, it does become like that, isn't it? It's tedious, and it's exhausting, just the same old things that, I mean, it's interesting that Meg Linehan, someone who works for them, is still sort of fighting this, but it must be frustrating working for them and almost feeling like your work isn't being noticed or valued, when she brought out so many great pieces about the Challenge Cup, about the NWSL season. And I remember at the time when the NWSL did pull off their bubble with so much success, long before any of the other major US leagues did it, people were talking about the fact that they didn't get enough attention, didn't get enough credit. And that was completely true. But you did think that the people working in sport must have noticed. Maybe not sports fans, but those who work and write about the game, who are in close, know what's going on at their own publications, would have recognised it. So just seems like a bit of a slap in the face. And then when you look at what the WNBA did, similarly creating the bubble that they did, but also what they did on a social justice front, then to not even have that recognised is just yet another slap in the face. So I'm really surprised and really shocked, really, because obviously I live in my little echo chamber and my little vacuum where I follow a lot of NWSL journalists, a lot of players, a lot of WNBA players and journalists. So you think that you're living in this world where everyone knows, but actually you don't. And there's lots of people who have no idea and don't really recognise a lot of these athletes in these leagues that are doing so much good stuff and achieved so much and had good entertaining sport in during this year. And I think that's what's frustrating.
The Athletic, we love you and we want you to do better. Simple as that. Moving on to some better news. Flo, there's been an absolutely huge transfer in the WSL, if rumours are to be believed. Have you heard about it?
I have. Has it not been confirmed yet? It's still just rumours.
It's just paper talk, but I'm going to believe the rumours from good sources. And it is Mana Iwabuchi is coming over from Japan to play for Aston Villa. Huge news.
Big news, yeah. And they could do with the reinforcements.
Yeah, rarely do you feel like a transfer seems well-timed, well-placed, affordable, and a bit of a coup, really. You know, a player of this quality who's won World Cups, who's been to World Cup finals, who I thought was so exciting at the 2019 World Cup a couple of years ago, only 1 year ago, feels like a really long time. It just feels exactly like what the WSL and Aston Villa needs. Really good close control player, knows how to find a pass, knows how to bring other players in, is also Japan's all-time leading goal scorer, or tied for that role. It feels amazing to see a team like Aston Villa get a player like this. And it's a good sign, I think, for the depth of the league, hopefully.
Yeah, agreed. And that's probably one of the big women's football nations that we haven't seen a lot of players coming over. So it's exciting to see more, you know, players from Asia moving to the WSL and seeing it as an opportunity to grow. Because I know that Sophie Lawson watches a lot of the Japanese Women's League, and they recently announced...
Big Kobe Leonessa fan.
I think they recently announced that they were going to be going professional. So I think that's going to be a really exciting league to keep an eye on. Japan have already won the Women's World Cup. They're already a very strong team, so it'll be amazing to see how this impacts the growth of their domestic team, and they're surely only going to get better, because that's what we've seen reflected in the quality of other nations when they've created professional leagues. So yeah, really exciting.
Yeah, listen, I really recommend one of my favorite matches from the 2019 World Cup was that Holland-Japan last 16 game. Just kind of end-to-end great football. Loads of chances. Japan hit the bar late on, really dramatic finale, but I really recommend going back and watching it because of the Iwabuchi assist in that game. And throughout that whole tournament, she was fantastic. She's only 27, so she's a little bit younger than that World Cup winning Japan side, although I think she might have been in the squad for 2011. Really exciting to see her come to WSL, and I'm really looking forward to more star players, and like you said, from different parts of the world. Finally, on the midweek roundup, Everton and Manchester United rounded off the Conti Cup with a rearranged fixture up in Liverpool. Everton won 1-0, and it was a bit of a dead rubber flow. Obviously, Everton needed a 5-goal margin to try and get through to the final eight, and they only got the one goal. But some resolve for Willie Kirk, who's had a tough couple of months. This does mean that we have our eight Conti Cup teams rounded out, with Crystal Palace getting that last place. Going to have Durham in from the Championship as well. Bristol City are there. The thing that I took away from this game, though, Flo, I watched a little bit of it yesterday, is Ivana Fuso made her debut, long-awaited Germany under-19 player. She got a little bit of time. And I was also surprised in general to see how many star players Casey Stoney played in a game that, you know, the result didn't really mean anything to Manchester United. The other thing was Lucy Staniforth managed to play, so that made me feel a lot better after a knee injury at the weekend looked quite treacherous.
Yeah, I think Casey Stoney's all about momentum, which is why she didn't want to rest a bunch of players yesterday, because I think she wants to keep up the energy and the run that they're on. And I think she's worried about sort of a bit of a negative approach by resting a couple of players and changing things too much, because I think you do upset the rhythm a bit. And with just one game left to play before the Christmas break, you might as well just continue, especially if you have the ability to. And it's great as well, Abby McManus was back as well as Staniforth being on the pitch. So a few positives after some difficult situations with the squad and injuries. It's good to see that she feels like she's still got all the tools she needs and still some young, exciting talent to showcase. I also actually forgot to say, on the Champions League, the draw for the next round isn't going to be until February, as we wait for the remaining fixture to be played.
Bromby.
Yeah, so they haven't played either of those games. So that is going to kind of delay things a little bit, sadly. So Vålerenga versus Bromby is going to be happening in February, which is annoying. But yeah, once that's done, then the draw will be made and we'll know who's going to be playing each other in the last 16. So, but we have to be patient, sadly.
Something to look forward to, though. Flo, before we go to a break and then come back with your weekend previews, do you have a Champions League favourite?
Ooh. I think, depending on how the draw goes, because I feel like Chelsea are so likely to get Lyon in the semi-finals, which will kind of spoil the vibe. But depending on how the draw goes, it would be great to have a Chelsea-Lyon final. A real meeting of the minds.
Pernilla Harder revenge game.
Yeah. I think that would be great. But let's see, because I feel like it's inevitable that it will be a Chelsea-Lyon semi-final and that will ruin the vibes a bit. But yeah.
I quite fancy Barcelona.
Yeah, I fancy Barcelona too. They look really good.
Quite fancy Barcelona.
Against PSV and have all the tools they need as well. So, I mean, a Barcelona-Chelsea final would be wicked.
Give it to me. All right, we'll take a quick break, catch our breath, and be back looking at the matches going on in England this weekend. All right, in a minute. And we're back. Welcome back to Relatively Football Part 2. We're going to be looking at the Women's Super League and FA Women's Championship fixtures ahead of the last weekend of 2020. Flo, I'm thinking I might just change things up a little bit here and I might drop down to the Championship a little bit early, because I think this is the biggest match of the weekend, if you ask me. Durham are hosting Liverpool in a top-of-the-table clash in the FA Women's Championship that will be massive. Flo, it is second place versus third place. What are you feeling?
I love it. I really, really love it. I have a horrible feeling after that Durham performance last week, when they shipped a lot of goals, that Liverpool are going to win this one. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be a sort of 2-1, maybe even 2-2. But I just feel like Liverpool are going to edge it.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. I think Liverpool are coming into this game in really good form. They've been scoring a lot of goals. They've tended to be a little bit more inconsistent than Durham. Durham are the last unbeaten side in the league. Liverpool have only dropped points to the league leaders, Leicester. But they have got a couple of draws, 2-2 with Lewis and a 0-0 with Blackburn. So I feel like Liverpool definitely maybe have the better performance in them. It's just whether or not they can turn up on the day. And like you said, Durham have been fantastic, but did have that shaky game last week, kind of incredible game against Coventry. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Flo, this is the second time they've played this year. They actually opened the season playing each other and it finished 1-1. Beth Heppel stole the points with a 87th minute equaliser. Great goal, little dink of a finish. And Durham actually finished playing with 10 players that day due to injuries forcing them to keep going with one less player. So I think we've already got a sign that I think this game's going to be close. It's going to be decided by fine margins. But I sort of agree with you that I think Liverpool have the better 11. And if they show up, I do think they'll nick it, but I don't know. Something about Durham makes me think they seem really hard to beat, and I could see this one being 1-1. They gave Aston Villa a really tough time in the Conti Cup. They've played really well against the other big sides. They thrashed Sheffield United in the Cup. So I kind of feel like, you know, they're not just flat-track bullies, Durham, and they know how to turn up for a big game. Do go and watch this one, listener. I think it might be on FA Player, but if it's not on FA Player, Durham are hosting a free-to-air stream on their Facebook, and they're encouraging people to donate to food banks because the stream will be free. So instead of paying for your match fee, get on the Durham Facebook and donate to a food bank. And this is an absolute must-watch on the weekend's football slate. Also going on in the FA Women's Championship, London Bees are hosting Coventry. Oh, and just to say, the Durham-Liverpool game is the early kickoff. So all you Americans and Australians, look out. It's going to be noon in the UK, which will be 7 a.m. on the East Coast of the United States and 10 p.m. out in Australia. And then all the other championship games are at 2 p.m. UK time. London Bees are hosting Coventry. Blackburn Rovers are playing Leicester, which should be quite a good one. Palace are hosting Charlton and Sheffield United versus London City. Lewis have the weekend off. So yeah, Flo, you want to head over to the WSL now?
Yeah, let's jump on that WSL train.
Let's jump on that. Flo, it's another weekend where, once again, who is kicking off the weekend's football? Casey Stoney and her Doc Martens. I don't know how she does it, but she has some sort of grip on the FA that every single weekend, the opening match is always Manchester United. So this week, Manchester United are back at home to bottom of the side, Bristol City. We get a little top versus bottom action in the Ebony Salmon Derby. Flo, you know, the obvious thing is this is going to be one-way traffic, the best team in the league versus a team who've really had a rough week and look really almost destined for the drop. Could you see any way of Bristol getting something, and or how many goals are Manchester United going to score?
No, and at least three.
At least three, even with the five at the back for Bristol?
Yeah. They would need to hope that Manu's injury problems take their toll and Staniforth can't play, Heath can't play, James is still out, Ladd, Toon. I mean, there's so...
I feel like you're casting a spell.
I'm not casting any spells, but I mean, Ella Toon is in such good form. Yeah, and... Yeah. Even with everyone that can't, well, looks like they can't play on the weekend, that enough is strong for United, I think.
Kristen Press will be out of the game, as Flo is alluding to, with the worst illness she's ever had, but it's not COVID, she said in a tweet this week.
I wonder what it
is. Slightly mysterious. Yeah, it's quite worrying, but Kristen Press has been really ill and has been missed the last couple of matches and looks to be out for this one as well. As we end out 2020. Bristol, you know, what are they playing for at this point, Flo? You know, what do you do in games like this? Do you just rotate, or do you just sit 11 behind the ball, or do you just think, you know, who cares, we're playing for the Conti Cup now?
They're still playing to survive. I mean, they're only 4 points behind Villa. Yes, Villa have a game in hand, but...
The game in hand is against Chelsea, though, so they don't really have a game in hand.
Stranger things have happened. So I think they're still playing for survival. I don't think it's over yet. We're only just coming up to Christmas. There's still a lot of football to be played. But I think they've got to get into the mindset of causing problems on the counter-attack, which is what they're good at doing. Absorb lots of pressure, stay organised, stay focused, and just try and capitalise on any opportunity that comes their way. I think that's what they've got to do. I think they need to not worry too much about the gap ahead of them, because it will close. I think Villa, it's going to be between them and Villa. It's not over yet. Villa aren't going to win a lot of games this season, and neither are Bristol City. So they've got to still have the mindset that they're still in it. And it's difficult, because when you are losing games by big margins, I can imagine it's pretty hard to stay positive. But there is some positives for them over the last couple of performances in the WSL that they can take. Maybe not that game against Villa, but there's ways that they can push on. It's just so difficult with the situation that they've got and their budgets. But I don't think they should accept defeat yet across the whole of the season, because that's just too bleak.
Chin up, Bristol City. And moving on to the 12:30 kickoff in the UK, 30 minutes after the Manu and Casey Stoney get going. It's going to be 7:30 a.m. on the East Coast, 10:30 p.m. out in Australia. It's Arsenal who are hosting Everton. Big bounce back week for both these sides, Flo. I feel like they're both out of form. Arsenal only have one win in their last five matches in all competitions, which feels a bit strange to say. Do you think they can hold out for the full 90 minutes against Everton? We've seen them concede a lot of late goals of recently, giving away late goals against Chelsea, against United, City at the weekend. Do you feel like they can put the full 90 minutes and get back to winning ways, Arsenal?
I think so. It's all about mentality now. That's all the conversations around Arsenal.
Joe Montemurro has been using that word
a lot. It's all about mentality against the big teams, mentality at the end of games. They're a much better team than Everton on paper, and Miedemar, all she needs is one chance. That's all she needed last weekend, and if they can provide those opportunities, she will score. But there's a frailty. There's doubt that's creeping in, and will Everton be able to take advantage of that? I'm not so sure, but I think it could be a draw. I'm not sure Arsenal will win. I think it could be a draw.
I think Arsenal are going to get back to winning ways. I think we've seen in past seasons, they won this game 3-1 last year. They're really good against taking care of business against teams who are not as quality as them. And I think you can talk about mentality all you want, but if this comes down to football, Arsenal are much the better football side. And I think if Everton concede the first goal, I think their mentality might not be quite right, because they've really struggled the last couple of months as well. So I kind of fancy Arsenal to get a good bounce back on this one and get a few goals and see maybe players like Jordan Nobbs maybe kind of take over and see a little bit more ball control, a little bit more fluidity, Beth Mead as well. I think we're going to see a proper Arsenal performance that should put a smile back on some of the fans' faces after last weekend. The next game of the weekend, moving out of the early mid-afternoon kickoffs, you've got Birmingham hosting Manchester City, 2 p.m. kickoff in the UK, 9 a.m. on the East Coast, midnight out in Australia. Birmingham didn't play last weekend because of a flooded pitch, so they've had a bit of extra time off. City obviously had the Champions League midweek. Do you think Carla Ward and her small group of players will benefit from a bit of extra time off?
I think they will. There was obviously that news this week about Carla Ward facing disciplinary because of what she said after that Arsenal game about the referee, and she didn't really give herself much hope in that one, because as soon as you start to question the integrity of the match official, you're going to be in trouble. But it's a lesson learned for a young manager, and all managers go through that point in their career where they get in trouble with the FA. So I don't think they'll dwell on that too much. I think this stage of the season, with the number of fixtures there's been just with Conti Cup and everything, I'm sure it was a bit of a welcome rest, especially with the situation with COVID ongoing and kind of not knowing week to week what the situation is going to be with your squad. I'm sure they won't be too bothered about that, and they'll just carry on doing what they're doing, just pushing onwards and proving people wrong.
Yeah, they've been amazing this year, and I think it will be really fun to see. This feels like a great end-of-year fixture for Gareth Taylor as a new manager, and for Carla Ward as sort of a really exciting coach to watch. I'm excited to see how this one turns out.
Yeah, and I think we talked about Bristol City's mindset, but Birmingham are in a stage now where They're pretty safe. They would have to have a diabolical second half of the season for it to unravel now. So they're at the lucky stage where they've got nothing to lose. There's no pressure now. They've secured their status for another season, and they can play without fear, and they can challenge the status quo and And I think that's where they've really lucked out, because they don't have any of the stress anymore of having to worry about, are we going to get relegated, which was the main priority, was survival. Now they're blessed with being able to say, right, how good can we be? How much can we grow this season? So it's a completely opposite of what Bristol City are having to deal with.
In a word, Flo, are Manchester City in the title race?
I don't think so.
One word.
I don't think so.
That's too many words.
No. There you go.
It's a no. It's a no. It's a no from Flo. It's a yes from me, though, listener. Moving on. So 30 minutes after that, 2:30 p.m. kickoff in the UK, 9:30 East Coast, USA. And just after midnight for all you night out Aussies, Brighton are hosting Reading in a nice mid-table clash. Flo, we've seen a bit of Jekyll and Hyde from Brighton. Good 1 week, poor the next. This is a team where they really should be targeting points. At home against a beatable side, I really think Hope Powell's not going to accept defeat again, no matter how good the performance is. Reading, in a similar way, I feel anyway, they tend to raise their game against the big teams, and then I think they tend to lower their game against the lesser teams, and they're kind of a very consistent side when it comes to results, but Reading as well can look quite weird week to week. Do you think this is going to be the kind of game where both teams will fancy it for the win, and we might see quite a chaotic kind of 90 minutes?
Yeah, I'm excited for this game. I think it's the dark horse match of the weekend, because...
Ooh, dark horse game of the
two
week.
Two really unpredictable sides, so you never quite know what's going to happen in their games week to week. Reading off the back of two disappointing results when they didn't come away with 3 points or any points despite playing pretty well. Love to have shots on goal. Brighton, the opposite, don't have a lot of chances, but when they do, can be quite effective.
If your name's not Cagman, you're not taking
a shot. If your name's not Cagman, you're not coming in. So, I think it bodes for an interesting game.
Hope Powell, just please play Kirk Dye and Rebecca Stott at the back. I love Victoria Williams, but I do think your best performances have been with Kirk Dye and Stott. Build from the back. Let's get a little bit more Denise O'Sullivan on the ball. You know, you can press against Reading. They play so direct. They're going to turn the ball over as they try and create attacks. So, come on, Brighton. A little bit more creativity. A little bit sturdy at the back. Let's see something. And listener, obviously, watch this game for the wonderful Maya Letizier at left back, who is having a really fantastic season. Last game of the weekend, Flo, the 3 p.m. kickoff, 10 a.m. on the East Coast, United States. And we're back into the 1 a.m. slot out east. This one is maybe our relegation battle of the week. West Ham hosting Aston Villa. Perhaps the last time we will see Rachel Daly in the WSL for now. How do you think West Ham are getting on? They are interviewing managers, supposedly. There was a rumour this week Ludlow was maybe going to take over, but that's sort of been poo-pooed for now. Do you think West Ham really need to win this one? Otherwise, we're going to be worrying about them with Bristol. Or do you think Bristol are so far gone? Maybe West Ham are feeling pretty confident. They had a great result last week. But with Emily Van Egmond and Rachel Daly's time at the club perhaps coming to an end, you know, this team could still be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you've spoken before about their reliance on those loanies, especially in the last couple of weeks when they've played a big part in the results that they've managed to get. And it's a shame that it took this long to get to that point. You know, it almost felt like weeks, months wasted at the start under Matt Beard and those poor performances and poor results. I feel quite sorry for him given what's happened since. And maybe, you know, he wasn't utilising them in the best way, but not much has changed with where they're playing. You know, obviously Daly spent a couple of times playing at right back, but he played her up front too and didn't really have much success. But it's been a completely different the last couple of weeks. I think they're still sort of in trouble, but with only one relegation spot between Villa and Bristol City, by far the worst two teams in the league, West Ham would have to be seriously bad, I think, to get themselves down with those two. I think they will, once they get a new manager, once they get stability, I think they will create some daylight between themselves and Villa. I think they'll win against Villa on the weekend and things will start to move forward again, and they can almost press reset on this project and look to potentially recruit in January once they lose these loanees and reboot a little bit. But I do think also what's promising is players like Martha Thomas are stepping up and proving why that they were brought to the club in the first place, which bodes well, because that's what you need once you're about to lose some key players.
West Ham have always had goals in them. Last season, this season, they've always looked like they can put it together. It's more about managing the 90 minutes. So I quite like this one to be maybe a 2-2 or a 2-1, or maybe Villa do get beaten 3-1 if they can't keep up. But I think if Villa can get some goals and get Hales and Petzelberger on the ball, yeah, this could be a really fun one. And Flo, I have saved one more match in the lineup because you are going to be there on Sunday, and this is Chelsea hosting Tottenham Hotspur for a 2 p.m. kickoff UK time, 9 a.m. East Coast, midnight out in Australia. And this is potentially Zdorsky, Kennedy and Queen Alex Morgan's last game in the WSL unless we get some new contracts.
It's an interesting one for Spurs because they are on a good run with their new manager. Ryan Skinner's come in and they've put in some good performances, got their first win of the season, back-to-back wins as well, and Alex Morgan scoring. And we're still yet to find out what the situation is with her contract.
Very suspicious.
Very suspicious. She was on the warm-up this week with Rosie and Molly Kmita, a funny little chat about the World Cup, and she's continuously speaking about how much she's enjoyed moving here, and obviously with COVID it's not quite been the experience that she would have liked, but she still enjoyed it and she's enjoying playing football. So that would hint that she's going to be sticking around beyond Christmas, but it's hard to know, and they're not going to be back until I think it's the second week of January, so I think it's the 10th. So that's quite a big break for her to, you know, she might go back to the States and then she's got an isolate. I don't know what she's doing for her Christmas plans. Do any of us really? Who knows? But it's obviously a long break, and so she needs to work out what she's going to be doing. So, yeah, it's hard to know what's happening there. But would be nice to go out with a bang, and I think there might be some surprises. I don't know if Spurs will win, but I think they may take Chelsea by surprise.
They did really well in the Conti Cup last time they played Chelsea. They held it really, really tight for a good amount of time, and then they kind of capitulated at the end. I think having Alex Morgan starting, you're starting to see more goals from them, although some of the younger players like Rosella Ayan still aren't quite clicking. So I wonder if this will be the first time since Skinner took over that we'll see them play a little bit more defensive and try and eke out the game without trying to go gung-ho against weaker opposition like we saw last week. Sam Kerr is in incredible form, 4 goals in 2 games, goal in the Champions League midweek. So I think Hannah Godfrey's going to have her hands full playing against her. And obviously, you know, that's before you start mentioning Cuthbert, Kirby, harder. So, yeah, good luck, Spurs. I think this will be a really fun one to be at, and we'll get your take from the sideline, Flo.
Yes, looking forward to it. Been a while since I covered a women's game. And it's always great to be back at Chelsea and watching, you know, some of the best players in the world all in one super team, potentially the next Champions League winners, one of the best teams in Europe, potentially one of the best teams in the world. I mean, getting to watch them live is a blessing.
Blessed. So blessed. Well, enjoy your blessed weekend, listener. There's all the things to look out for. It should be a really, really good one, especially with that massive top-of-the-table clash in the FA Women's Championship. Follow us on Twitter at RelativelyFoot, Instagram at RelativelyFootball, and if you just fancy writing us a letter, you know, hit it up at RelativelyFootball@gmail.com. Flo, it is Thursday evening. Go have your supper and get some sleep, and I'll see you on the other side on Sunday evening. All the best.
See ya.
See ya.